information experts. We're a 15-year strategic communications firm. We serve primarily the federal government. We're in about 15 different government agencies. Mm-hmm. We have three areas of practice. We've got a human capital practice, training and education, as well as strategic marketing and outreach. And we really are the only firm that does all that we do as well as we do it in an integrated framework.
How do you get what progression happened in your company to get human capital together with communications? That doesn't seem like they would fit together, although I'm sure there's a good connection there.
That's a great question. And typically at first glance, that's exactly what you would ask. How mm-hmm. do marketing and outreach integrate with human capital? I started the firm 15 years ago. I have a background in instructional design and curriculum development. So training and development really was the core and the foundation of the organization. Mm-hmm. Along the way, we added strategic communications, marketing, and outreach. That was a very natural evolution. A few years ago, we went ahead and added human capital. We are a prime on the Office of Personnel Management, Training Management, and Assistant Contracts for both human capital and training. The integration of human capital and training really is very logical because the human capital piece is really going into an organization, figuring out, do I have the right people in the organization? Do I have the right people in the right positions in the organization? What are the competencies required for each position to make sure that everybody is performing at their maximum potential and capability to push the organizational mission forward? Mm-hmm. Once you have all that figured out, then you can design education and training programs to go around them.
Yeah.
So, very natural fit. Mm-hmm. How does human capital fit in with marketing and outreach? Well, if you're looking at an organization and you're saying, I need to do some recruiting here. I, for the first time in my life, or the first time in the government's existence, there are four generations that might be working side by side.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your millennials all the way up to the baby boomers. You've got people who process information differently, who work differently, who expect different things from their work environment and from their coworkers. How do I create an environment and how do I recruit for people coming into the organization in the most effective manner? Well, enter marketing and outreach and communications.
Mm-hmm.
To develop very effective, highly targeted strategic marketing campaigns that are going to recruit the right people and get the right messaging out, you need strong marketing communications.
Mm-hmm.
So therein lies the fit between mm-hmm. human capital and strategic and marketing and outreach.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would imagine the big challenge when it comes to training in government right now is that four-generation spread, because everybody, each one of those generations receives and processes information dramatically differently. It's not like when I was the youngest generation in an organization and the learning patterns and practices were similar, not the same, but now it's a whole different thing from the older to the younger.
Yeah, and that definitely is one of the major challenges, or as I like to see them as opportunities, mm-hmm. that exist in the government from an education and training perspective. Certainly when you design curriculum, you really do have to take into consideration, first and foremost, who your audience is. And you're right, some of the older generations may not be as comfortable or familiar with some of the technology-based programs and solutions that we provide. And clearly, the younger generations, they want information on demand as soon as possible. They are very highly visual learners. Mm-hmm. They are highly interactive learners. So how do you create a balance to be sure that you're addressing the needs of all of those learners across the population?
Yeah, and then they have no desire at all to sit in a classroom with, you know, a bunch of desks and an instructor at the front of the room.
Nope. Mobility is key.
Yeah.
And interactivity is key with that audience.
Mm-hmm. As you're observing these trends and you're seeing what the needs of the agencies are to be able to provide the training to the employees that they need, what are the agencies coming to you and saying, this is my opportunity, if mm-hmm. you want to put it that way, and I need a solution for this situation? What are the most common types of opportunities you're seeing?
I think the biggest opportunity that we see across the board really is the acquisition workforce.
Mm-hmm.
The whole entire procurement process overall is something that there are always challenges with, to make sure that it is streamlined, to make sure that it is effective. One of the things that we do for Department of Defense is we provide the training actually on their procurement desktop system, on the system that is used to procure pretty much every item within DOD.
Mm-hmm.
But more so are the processes that are associated with it. So getting all of the people who function in the procurement and acquisition workforce trained across the agency. And again, that starts with doing the competencies, just the basic competencies of those positions. Mm-hmm. That's a huge challenge right now.
Yeah. And in that realm, you're not just providing training for people who are new to the federal workforce either. This is an ongoing situation.
Because absolutely.
Everybody tells me it takes anywhere from 5 to 7 years for somebody coming into DOD to be up to speed when it comes to acquisition.
It is. It's a consistent training process across the board. But we do have challenges that you've got a whole wave of people retiring.
Mm-hmm.
You've got so much intellectual capital exiting these agencies. And at the same time, these agencies are trying to create environments for the new generations coming up. Is the government really a place where the newer generations want to work? How do we make it an attractive workplace? How do we make sure that they have all of the skills and the knowledge that they need to be successful? It's a big challenge.
Is there a mechanism whereby you can try to capture as an instruction organization some of that intellectual capital that's leaving and be able to recirculate it through the training materials that you provide?
We do that. Yeah. We do that in the upfront analysis. We do that in our human capital practice when we're creating the competencies for our clients. Doing the upfront analysis is essential, and obviously meeting with those stakeholders, capturing the data, going through best practices that they have already implemented, very, very important, never really starting with a clean slate.
Yeah, because that's everybody says the same thing, HR people, hiring managers, trainers, mm-hmm. everything, that as these people leave, fortunately we haven't seen the wave that
right.
we've been anticipating for about 15 or 20 years, it seems
sure.
like. That's the biggest thing that people talk about is these people are leaving. They know how things are done. They know where all the bodies are buried. And once they go out the door, a lot of them tend to not come back because they're ready to be finished with whatever it is that
they've
been
exactly
doing
right.
for the
yeah.
last however long. What's the hardest part of building this training for the agencies? What's the most difficult thing for you to do?
You know, there's a lot of cultural issues that go on with working with the government,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of bureaucracy. I mean, it is what it is.
Right.
We work with our agencies, and we also serve the commercial sector. We serve the private sector, and when we create a schedule for our clients, those deliverables are contingent upon adhering to certain obligations that our client has in terms of review cycles, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think for us, part of the biggest challenge is definitely making sure that those schedules stay, you know, in line with what we're trying to get done.
Mm-hmm.
From an internal perspective, as the CEO, I need to make sure that the people that I have working on the projects, especially my project managers and my program managers, are very, very familiar with the contracting process.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't do things that can ultimately set us up for failure.
Right.
And those are things like making sure that every conversation pretty much is documented,
mm-hmm.
creating a very strong paper trail of all interaction and all exchanges, making sure that when there is an opportunity to go outside of the scope that we've agreed to with the statement of work,
mm-hmm.
that my project managers and program managers understand what the process is to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because taking a verbal direction from someone inside the agency who may not be authorized to give a scope of work change, we are going to end up being liable
right.
for that. So I think that the challenges of making sure that a project is successful in the government, I think that they're multi-level. It's very complex. But it really adheres to a very clearly defined set of rules. And if you can follow that set of rules, then you'll be set up for success.
Marissa Levin is the Chief Executive Officer of Information Experts, my guest for the hour on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Beginning, a granola bar was good for you. Then someone decided to dip it in caramel and roll it in chocolate chips. Right about when they were sticking gummy bears to the granola bar, it seemed something had gone awry. We wonder if the same hasn't happened with healthcare. What started as a good idea seems to have lost its way. That's why Kaiser Permanente's 21st century model makes all the more sense. A system where doctors believe total health means physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. Where you can email your doctor's office, make routine appointments, check most test results. Where the people on your health team are digitally connected to each other and to you. So instead of something that's so overprocessed it's forgotten what it was supposed to be in the first place, Kaiser Permanente believes in the original good idea. Health that's focused on you. We're Kaiser Permanente and we want you to thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Ravens fans, 1500 AM Federal News Radio is your D.C. home for Ravens football. Listen to every game as the Ravens dominate the AFC North and march toward the Super Bowl.
Give it to McGahee. He's got a small hole inside the five. Still in his feet. Touchdown! Willis McGahee fires over the middle. It's intercepted! Ray Lewis with a pick. Flacco throws. End zone. Ashmedana has it! Touchdown, Ravens! The Ravens offense delivers the miracle!
This week, the Ravens take on the Carolina Panthers. Pre-game starts at 1230 on 1500 AM.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11, brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, join host Tony Vergnetti to hear how young feds are staying active and engaged as part of the federal workforce when he talks with two reps from Young Government Leaders and Steve Ressler, president of GovLoop.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon, helping the procurement community collaborate to do their jobs better. It's the idea behind the Frontline Forum. They were around in the 90s, remember that? They're back. An update from OFPP Administrator Dan Gordon. And data everywhere. We'll tap open data lessons from around the world from the International Open Government Data Conference this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Marissa Levin, Chief Executive Officer of Information Experts. And the you were talking before we went on the air about Director Barry's event at HUD yesterday. He was talking at HUD, and this is a top story right now at federalnewsradio.com. HUD making headlines because they've shrunk the hiring process. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's been a pet project of the director since he's taken over there. And the HUD, one agency that's having success with that, and other agencies trying this, some of the same techniques or developing their own. How does that look to you from the outside in, shrinking those times the way that they have, using the techniques that they have?
Well, John Barry is very committed to making sure that the hiring process of federal workers becomes a lot more streamlined, and that is it is more in line with performance-based work. Mm-hmm. And for us as a company who specializes in human capital, it's great for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're already seeing agencies come out with statements of work. Yesterday, we received 6 statements of work, just 6 on 6 totally separate projects alone, mm-hmm. All on competencies, mm-hmm. competency assessments, going in, doing the diagnosis of the organization, seeing which jobs are required within various groups within the agencies, making sure that you have the right people, everything that I was talking about mm-hmm. earlier. this is a huge initiative to make sure that the government gets the right people in the right seats.
Yeah, he's talked a lot about a lot of things that I think people from the outside looking in seem like no-brainers, and yet they haven't been done. So there's got to be a reason if they were that easy to achieve. Things like the hiring pools, where you have people that are qualified. If one agency says this person's qualified to be an accountant at my agency, there's no reason to make that person start over from scratch.
Well, you know, I see where you would have that line of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
As a company that's working literally in 15 different government agencies,
yeah.
Every agency has its own culture.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot say that the skills and the talents that are required at IRS are going to be the same skills and talents that are required at GSA.
Right.
These are, every agency has its own culture, and really within every agency, you can break it down even further to different offices within each agency mm-hmm. that also have their own culture.
Mm-hmm.
The skills and the knowledge and the experience aren't necessarily transferable for every single position.
You think it's a good idea to shift the KSAs away from the beginning of the hiring process to later on?
No, I'm not suggesting that you shift them. I'm just suggesting that when you're doing the initial hiring, you really need to look to see, make sure you've got your job descriptions clearly identified, and you mm-hmm. have to make sure that you've got the competencies identified. This is something that we do in our own company. We've used our own human capital practice to make sure every position within our company has very clear competencies associated with every position.
Mm-hmm. That's really been a tough nut for the agencies to crack. I know that when Linda Springer was there, they started to work on some templates where if you had jobs where the competencies were similar mm-hmm. from or the same from one agency to the next, you could kind of pull these templates and use them when you were posting for jobs.
And they're great templates,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to consider the overall culture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're hiring someone, again, for IRS, that's a whole mentality, you know, auditing and finance, taxes. Compare that over to, you know, GSA or FDIC or, you know, SBA. These are all very, very different cultures.
If I'm a hiring manager in an agency and I'm sitting down and starting to consider those things, what should I be thinking about?
If you're a hiring manager in the agency?
Yeah, and I'm starting to try to figure out how to narrow this process down. I'm going to sit down and work with somebody like you, and I am just trying to get this together.
Well, the first thing is you need to see what's in your own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be looking to see who's in your own group. And you need to understand what your mission and your vision is. What is your office trying to achieve? And based on that, what is the experience that you need to actually fulfill that vision and mission? Then you look in your own pool of candidates to see, who do I have that can be supporting that? Often we might have the right people in our organization, but they may not necessarily be in the right seats.
Yeah.
So I think starting in your own organization to see what you can work with, that would be the best thing to do. Typically, you do need to bring someone in from the outside mm-hmm. to give you a fresh perspective and an objective look, because it's often that we're just too close to our own problems to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit more when we come back from the break, because
sure.
I think that's an interesting idea. I think we always assume that promoting from within is generally the best thing to do, and I'm not sure that's always the case. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back with Marissa Levin of Information Experts, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 181 points. The Nasdaq higher by 47. General Motors pulling off the largest initial public offering in history. The IPO was priced at $33 but opened at $35 and change, raising $20.1 billion. The FBI has arrested two former secretaries of Bernard Madoff on charges they helped him dupe people with fictitious investments. They're also accused of cash cashing in on the Ponzi scheme themselves. Fewer Americans are at risk of foreclosure. The Mortgage Bankers Association says about 9.1% of homeowners missed at least one mortgage payment in the July through September quarter. That's compared to 9.9% a month earlier. And higher food prices may take a bite out of this year's Thanksgiving plans. A survey shows nearly 70% of shoppers have seen grocery prices rise in the past few weeks. Chris Maurer, CNBC.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Does a rolling stone gather no moss? No moss. You're gonna have to trust me on this one.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
What is vanguarding? Vanguarding is the idea that investing success is measured in years, not days. It's the belief in doing what's right for clients, not Wall Street. It's understanding that where you invest is just as important as how much you invest. Vanguarding is an investment philosophy that investors have used to help reach their financial goals for decades. So are you just investing, or are you vanguarding? Learn more at Vanguard.com or at 888-VANGUARD. All investments are subject to risk.
$20 million, but it was a scam.
Brought to you by WEPA.
The Office of Personnel Management's 400 employees participating in the results-only work environment get another 12 months to test it. Roe was supposed to end in December. The concept allows federal workers to set their own schedules, but holds them to specific performance goals. The agency is improving how employees are evaluated to make sure those appraisals are in line with the goals of Roe, not based on the more structured work environment. I'm Amy Morris.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? WEPA policyholders will be receiving over $6 million this fall. In fact, since 1996, WEPA has returned over $52 million in premium refunds. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Besides a long history of refunds, WEPA offers significantly lower premium rates than Fegley. Visit WAEPA.org to learn all about the advantages of life insurance from WEPA. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has just completed a major update of the agency's primary education resource portal, the website education.noaa.gov. The aim is to better connect educators and students interested in NOAA's education and science resources. The website serves as a portal to lesson plans, educational multimedia, data sources, career profiles, and other education content. The website has five themes. Teachers can find information about hurricanes, tides, climate change, the water cycle, or other earth science topics. It also provides information on professional development, academic scholarships, career exploration, and education grants. NOAA's mission is to understand and predict changes in the Earth's environment, as well as to conserve and manage coastal and marine resources.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
A television show featuring an art auction pulled in about $20 million, but it was a scam. About 5 years ago, the FBI started receiving calls from victims
saying that they'd been defrauded of a few thousand dollars, some art they had bought that they found out was fake.
Supervisory Special Agent Chris Colarco of FBI Los Angeles says the calls kept coming in. IRS and LAPD joined forces with the Bureau.
It was a multi-million dollar fraud.
The auction was rigged, the art was misrepresented, and there were fake bidders used to drive up prices.
You can imagine a fraud scheme where they were on TV being beamed throughout the United States as well as the world for up to 10 hours of programming a week selling fake art.
More than 10,000 victims.
The three main subjects pled guilty and agreed to forfeiting all the art that we seized, the money seized, as well as received prison sentences between 5 and 8 years.
I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Marissa Levin of Information Experts, my guest for the hour on industry chatter. And a reminder that our conversation will be archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so you can find it whenever you want it. We were talking before the break, Marissa, about the concept of having the best people in the right seats.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept that people don't spend a whole lot of time, it doesn't sound like, analyzing how their workforce is being used, whether it's in government or at an agency that does business with the government or anybody else. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think overall, you know, and I'm just speaking as a CEO, I know with my organization, we've been in business for 15 years, and I have people that have been with me now for over 10 years, mm-hmm. which says a lot about our culture. As a CEO, I'm very protective and sensitive to our culture, making sure that we have a healthy culture, that people feel empowered and comfortable to kind of stretch beyond what they typically do, that there's a lot of learning opportunities. And I think that just the CEOs and the business owners that I know, we have to really make a conscious effort to make sure that we're constantly evaluating, do we have the right people to get us to the next level? And very often, the people that have gotten you to where you are, you know, for better or for worse, may not be the people to get you to the next level. The type of people that you need at 5 million are not going to possibly be the same people that you need at 15 million or 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, you know, I am someone who is very loyal and very relationship focused. And so I'm constantly having to balance my loyalty to my employees individually mm-hmm. versus my loyalty to my own employees organizationally.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to continue to provide a phenomenal workplace for my employees, and I have to make sure that they are the right people. And if they're not the right people, how do I find ways to potentially navigate them into other places in my organization? Because mm-hmm. these are people who have been with me for a long time, and they've got a lot of intellectual capital. They have a lot of knowledge. They're loyal. They fit with the other people that work in my organization. I think that's just a challenge that every CEO has, making sure that they have the right people in the right seats. And when they come across people that may not fit, how do you handle that?
Mm-hmm. Do most executives default, do you think, to keeping the status quo rather than trying to steer people in different directions?
I don't, you know, that's a really hard question. I don't know if it's so black and white as, you know, either keep them where they are or, you know, send them packing.
Well, yeah, I like the idea that you're talking about directing them in a different way in your organization. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think that, you know, I think when you're a hammer, everything's a nail. Mm-hmm. And maybe because we're very human capital centric
mm-hmm.
and we're very people centric, that we're very focused on that. I would have to venture a guess that most companies don't have as sophisticated of a internal human capital structure that we have with mm-hmm. the competencies and the performance reviews and things of that nature, and just being really cognizant of who fits in what seat. And if they're not in the right seat, can you put them in another seat? I don't know if a lot of companies actually put a lot of effort into building their human capital infrastructure internally.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, and we can pick up on that a little bit later. I want to go back to what we were talking about the work that you're doing for mm-hmm. the agencies
sure.
directly. I asked you about what they're asking you for a lot. From your position as an expert in these kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
what are agencies not thinking about HR that you think they maybe should be thinking about?
I don't know if it's not that they're not thinking about it, but
or maybe not focused on or prioritizing just yet.
I think that sometimes they're just so caught up in the minutiae of like the smaller problems, the tactical problems,
mm-hmm.
that they may not be having a larger strategic focus. But I have to say that we are seeing more of an emphasis on communications from a strategic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a really nice shift that we've seen in the last maybe 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of opportunities for strategic communications,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that 5 years ago we just didn't see. There is now a greater emphasis on social media strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We are helping GSA. We're constructing the GSA social media strategy.
Mm-hmm.
They are definitely paying attention to how they connect, again, getting back to the various generations. They're paying attention how to use the different social media platforms out there to connect with various generations, and that's a great thing. So I think strategic communications, social media, these are some of the trends that we see on the communication side, and it's very, very refreshing to see.
Are the agencies beyond the point, I'd say probably 2 years or so ago when I would talk to agencies about social media, a lot of the conversations revolved around the platforms.
Right.
And we want to be on this platform or the other, and not as much around what are you going to do once you have a Twitter account? What are you going to say to people? Are they kind of beyond that, do you think?
I definitely think they're beyond that. Yeah. I think that, you know, in today's business environment, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, the three largest platforms, you've got a couple others out there, you know, MySpace and Foursquare and a couple others that are popping up. But the three biggest ones are Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Those pretty much are now taken for granted.
Mm-hmm.
You go to GSA. GSA Public Building Services is one of our clients. And they use social media extensively.
Mm-hmm.
They use it. They use Twitter. They use Facebook. They use LinkedIn. They're constantly updating. IRS uses YouTube for hiring.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that these agencies, they're definitely not concerned with what platform am I using. They're definitely concerned with how do I get my message out to the audiences. And as you know, or you probably are aware, DOD actually uses Twitter to provide real-time updates on what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, and that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to be able to have that type of real-time knowledge on what's going on, you know, across the world is invaluable.
That is a shift, because for a long time the focus seemed to be on we want to stick our flag in the ground and not necessarily know what we do once we own the territory. So it's encouraging to hear that that is shifting, and that agencies have a sense of what is being pushed out is just as important or more important than the way they do it.
Well, and I think it's a trend also. I mean, again, coming from the perspective of a CEO, social media is here. You cannot put it in a bubble. And I know as a business owner, what we've done is we've embraced it wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
I want all of my employees to be out there pushing information experts through all of their social media accounts. I'm not going to be so concerned with policing every single message.
Right.
I'll never succeed at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's in my best interest to support them in their social media initiatives. In fact, we have a social media expert coming in next Tuesday to actually train my entire company on how to get the most out of all of their social media tools.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing that so that they can use them most effectively as individuals, you know, representatives of the company, but also so that we can make sure that we're staying ahead of the curve on the service that we provide our clients as a social media strategy company.
Yeah. Do you think we get hung up too much on the citizen to agency interaction when it comes to social media and forget about the collaborative power inside the agencies?
I don't know how much they're using social media internally.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
I know GSA, I think that GSA is very much on the forefront of using social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I can look across the leadership of GSA and not be surprised by that.
Yep.
Because it's, you know, it's young leadership
and
they're bringing in ideas. I know part of the GSA leadership that we're working together with, they come from private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that as we see additional people coming in from private sector going into the agencies, I think we're going to see a little bit of a shift and a little bit of innovation and new ideas coming into the agencies as well.
Marissa Levins, the CEO of Information Experts, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Improvised explosive devices pose a significant threat to U.S. warfighters. ITT is at the forefront of this battle, delivering technologies that help our troops stay ahead of these emerging threats. Through advanced information networks, data sharing, signal jamming, and other innovative technologies, ITT provides critical solutions to enable our troops to complete their missions and come home safely. That's just part of the innovation happening at ITT. ITT Defense and Information Solutions, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The military is looking deep into the private sector for cybersecurity knowledge. Here's Riley Repko, Senior Advisor to the Deputy Chief of Staff for Operations and Requirements at the Air Force.
You got to have leadership that appreciates the value of and a realization that the intellectual capital resides out there beyond the five sides of this building. I'm more interested in a lot of the innovative smaller firms.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Ozzie.
The beauty of the federal health plan has always been it doesn't discriminate because of age, sex, race, retirement status, right, unlike the private sector. So it is the best program in America for health people, and now is the open season. And also people can look at changing their optional dental and their optional vision insurance.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider. The Dorabeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorabeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorabeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorabeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Marissa Levin of Information Experts, my guest. And it's interesting that we're talking about innovation in government, the subject of a panel that I moderated this morning at for a firm, talking about that very thing. And one of the things that came up in that conversation was talked a lot about entrepreneurship and how to foster that inside government, where the idea of failing is really, I mean, I'm sure you know, agencies are very risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid to fail, and fostering that environment that it's okay to fail. If you fail fast and fail smart, well, you learn something from what has happened. What do you think, being an entrepreneur on the mm-hmm. outside and working with the agencies, what are some moves that people can make inside the agencies to help encourage that, that it's okay if not everything that we try works perfectly 100%?
Well, it's a cultural mindset. It's got to come from the top.
Mm-hmm.
We support the Chief Human Capital Office within IRS, Jim Falcone, and he is someone who definitely embraces innovation and new ways of doing things. So I think that the leadership really has to communicate that it's okay to fail. The thing about making mistakes is that you don't want to make a mistake twice. So if you can use the mistake as a learning experience, everything is a teachable moment and mm-hmm. everything is a learning experience, but it has to come from the top. And organizations, whether it's a government agency or a regular corporation, there seems to be a CYA mm-hmm. mentality
yeah.
that needs to be extinguished in order for innovation to thrive. We've actually done innovation days in my organization where we have set apart, we implemented days where people can literally go away and they build their time to innovation creation.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of organizations that do that. Google gives employees 1 week a month just to go away and innovate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting that our government agencies get to that model, but it is a cultural mindset that thinking outside the box, pushing beyond the boundaries, and not being afraid to fail won't be penalized.
So I'm guessing then that you're a big fan of anything that will allow these employees to figure out, develop their own ideas and kind of incubate their own ideas and be able to say, here, can you do something with this?
Well, not only am I a fan of it, I depend on it.
Mm-hmm.
In my own organization, I can't possibly think that I have all the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my greatest ideas in my company have come from my employees.
Yeah.
So I like to think that our organization is definitely a culture. Innovation is one of our core values. And I encourage and embrace people to come to me with ideas. And typically I'll say, that's a great idea. Now how can we get to the implementation phase of it? Mm-hmm. So definitely it has to come from the top.
But that's been a concept that's kind of been difficult for government to get used to. It's kind of counter to the way that things have always been done.
And that's part of the reason why there's such a culture clash between small businesses and entrepreneurs and the cultures with inside the government. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because one of the biggest topics in government is the threat of insourcing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know as a small business owner, if I look at my organization and my people who work for me, I can say publicly, pretty safely, I don't think many of my employees will go and work for the government.
Mm-hmm.
There is such a cultural difference between a small business and a government agency.
Mm-hmm.
I think where you're seeing a lot of the insourcing issues where a lot of the private sector employees are leaving to go work for the government is probably in the larger firms where there is a little bit more of an alignment between the culture, you know, a large company and government agency,
mm-hmm.
there's a very much of a misalignment between the cultures of a small business and a government agency. Now, that gets you back to the fact that there's huge opportunities if the government agencies and the stakeholders within those agencies are really open to learning how to innovate, how to do more with less, you know, how to create cultures for the generations that are coming up. They'll listen to the small businesses that are out there because we know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. The idea of more with less is one that I hear in every, it's woven into every conversation mm-hmm. about every subject that has anything to do with operations inside an agency. How is that manifesting itself in the way that you interact with the agencies?
There's a lot of overhead and there are a lot of excess positions that mm-hmm. we see. On some of our projects, it's pretty incredible how many people we have to get buy-in from for decisions, how many people weigh in on project reviews. There's a lot of overhead
mm-hmm.
in the agencies. There's a lot of excess positions.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got these lifers, and the way that the system is set up is that it's almost impossible to terminate
mm-hmm.
in the government.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got people who have positions for life and are just going to continue going through the ranks. And it's very hard to trim that way.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea, though, of trying to get those folks to buy into whatever momentum is coming along, whether it's technologically, whether it's innovation, whatever it is, that can be pretty daunting, too, I imagine, because those tend to be the folks who are the we've always done it this way folks. Is that fair, do you think?
Well, if you look at the Small Business Administration and the new Women's Procurement Set-Aside Program that, you know, after 10 years, they finally approved the Women's Set-Aside Program.
Mm-hmm.
10 years? Really? 2.5 administrations? That's how long it took to get that passed?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? That's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there are people that say, well, we've always done it this way and this is how it's going to, we're going to keep doing
it. Yeah, this is the way it's done.
Right.
And that's the surest way, it seems to me, to drive away a new generation of people who thinks, young people, that's anathema to them. That's
mm-hmm.
the worst thing in the world that you can say to somebody who, especially of the millennial generation, who says, no, we don't do anything the way that it used to be done
right.
or the way that you do it. We do everything completely differently.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. Marissa Levin's my guest on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. She is the CEO of Information Experts, and we'll be back to wrap up our conversation in just a few moments.
I'd say most people know that they could save 15% or more on their car insurance by switching to GEICO. Helping people save money, it's what I do. And quite frankly, it's something that GEICO's been doing for over 70 years. But here's the really good part. GEICO is actually a shorthand term for Government Employees Insurance Company. So yeah, GEICO and the government employees, we go way back. Which is why if you're a federal employee, you could save even more money on top of GEICO's already low rates. And the news just gets better. GEICO's got an impressive 97% customer satisfaction rate. So you get some of the best service this side of the Potomac, and you get to save hundreds at the same time. Win-win, my friend. Oh, I've got to run. But I'll let my friend Mike fill you in on the rest. All yours, mate.
Thank you, my little green friend. Hey, it's Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit GEICO.com and see how much you could save.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
When Republicans take control of the House next year, the Homeland Security Committee will likely differ on one major issue with the Democratic-led Senate Committee. Congressional observers expect the Republicans to push for more fencing along the Mexican border and an increase in the arrest and deportation of illegal immigrants. But the two sides are expected to agree on issues like cargo security and disrupting terrorist plots in the United States. I'm Mark Seagraves.
Did you know that more than 3,000 people die in home fires each year in the U.S.? A working smoke alarm will alert you to danger and could make the difference between life and death. Smoke and heat intensify quickly. Every second counts. If a fire occurs while you and your family are asleep, how will everyone escape? Without a plan, you may not know the best route to safety. Create a family emergency escape plan. Visit 72hours.org to learn how. Remember, get out and stay out.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at BreakDownTheWalls.com.
Hi, I'm Renthia Rost from GEICO. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington have been in our community more than 80 years. To ensure that the youth of today will be full partners in a better tomorrow, give a child the gift of a membership for 2010. And while you're at it, reach out and volunteer to mentor a child in your community. Go to www.bgcgw.org and tell them the GEICO sent you. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Marissa Levin is Chief Executive Officer of Information Experts. My guest for the hour on industry chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And what's the low hanging fruit when it comes to the world of HR and the agencies? What are things that people might be able to change relatively quickly about the way their agency handles people, manages people, or even in the private sector? And if I'm running a company that does business with the government, what can I do? Maybe relatively quickly and maybe not even that expensively to try to rethink or reshape the way that I handle my people.
Competencies. Looking at your competencies, having someone come in that knows how to look at the competencies within your organization and how those positions in your company align to the mission and the vision that you're trying to execute.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't define your competencies up front, you can't hire the right people. Everything is about talent management. Mm-hmm. It's all about recruitment and retention and finding the people that align with your mission and your vision. That's it. It's got to start with making sure the competencies are clearly defined before you do any hiring. It's not just throwing up a job description on CareerBuilder or on Hot Jobs or on LinkedIn. Really understanding what skill sets and experience does my position in my company need to execute my vision and my mission.
You hit a word there that I wish I would have thought of or made a note of for us to talk about earlier in the hour because we're almost out of time, and that's retention.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder sometimes if we spend so much time thinking about hiring and thinking about bringing new people in, we don't think often enough or deeply enough about how to keep the good people that we have, to keep them engaged and keep them satisfied so they keep doing the great work that they're doing already.
Well, we think of retention as really re-recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Companies and agencies, but, you know, coming from a CEO's perspective, not only do we have to recruit new employees, we constantly have to re-recruit our existing employees. So just making sure that we're touching base with them. How are they feeling? Like doing a temperature read, a pulse check on the organization. Where are their frustrations? I mean, just this past week, you know, 3 days ago, I went to lunch with three of my employees who've all been with me for 8, 9, 10 years. And for an hour and a half, I just let them vent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me what's working. And one of the questions that I ask in my organization a lot is, how can I do my job better?
Mm-hmm.
Am I meeting your needs as a CEO? What am I doing right? How can I improve? And in fact, starting in February, I am going to start undergoing formal evaluations and performance reviews by my own employees.
Wow.
And how can I do better? How can I make sure that I am staying in touch, especially as a company grows? It's one thing when you've got 10 employees or 15 employees, but when you're getting to 50, 60, 70 employees, how can I stay connected to everybody, and how can I maintain the culture that I'm so proud of?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what my focus is as a CEO.